Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Cobb, and we're pleased to have back as a guest Dr. Michael Rice. Dr. Rice is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again, as well as many other courses, teaches primarily by video, and that's how I first learned of his material, through Noetic Science, and teaches forgiveness, the true meaning of forgiveness from the ancient Aramaic, teaching healing through relationships and teaching communication, as well as some of the other courses that are more recent. Thank you, Michael, for joining us. Please introduce yourself to the audience if you would like to give your contact information and tell us a little bit about your retreat that you have in, I believe it's in Missouri, is that right?
Our home base is in Theodosia, Missouri, and it's a delight to be with you. And
thank you.
Our home base is actually mostly our van. We're on the road. Jeannie and I, my wife, are on the road 6 to 10 months of the year. Going anywhere on the globe, we're invited to deliver first century Aramaic forgiveness. So our home to be contacting our information is our website, which is www.whyagain.org. And the title of my book is Why Is This Happening to Me Again? People can download the book free from the website in several different languages and find all kinds of support for how to apply this ancient technology that was turned exactly backward through Greek translations of Aramaic ideas and virtually disappeared the teaching of forgiveness from the planet. You know, I'll oftentimes use an example of, let's imagine that tomorrow all virus technology disappears from the earth. There's no antivirus for your computer. There's no removing viruses. You got to live with whatever comes in, and that's the way it is. And imagine we have a young man who is born tomorrow, grows up, and 20 years from now he goes to work in the computer industry, and he goes into the office every day, and he spends 6 or 7 hours working around these viruses, and he gets an hour of productivity, and he thinks that's really great. This has been a good day. And everybody knows that's just how computers work. And it's very comparable to the disappearance of forgiveness from the human realm. Hostility and fear are viruses to human beings. They literally are anti-human life. And we have a simple definition of a human life. All you have to do is hold a newborn child to know what human life is. And we've asked tens of thousands of people all over the globe to describe the essence of their newborn. And everybody's word is some variation on the theme of love. Hostility and fear are viruses. And 2,000 years ago, there was a technology which we're working to reestablish that showed people how to remove those viruses from their structures, from their genes, from their emotions, from their minds, from their bodies, and therefore shift everything in their lives. And when that technology was turned backward, that is, when the Greeks got a hold of it, forgiveness became, you know, you did something really terrible that caused all this pain inside of me, but it's okay, I'll forgive you, I'll let you off the hook for what's going on inside of me. And when I let you off the hook for what's going on inside of me, I've never not done anything to change what's happening inside of me. Mm-hmm. In the first century, you'd never be invited to forgive another. You'd never be invited to forgive yourself. You'd be handed a tool with which you go inside yourself and remove the viruses, the hostility, the fear, the grief, the rage, the sadness, the pain, the drama, and the trauma, and get back to living a human life. In a nutshell, that's it. And most people today are much like that kid who at 20 spends 7 hours working around viruses and gets an hour of productivity. Most people are living in that realm today. It's like, well, you know, you do a little rage, you do a little guilt. You got to keep on your shield. You got to keep your anger up. You got to protect yourself. You got to fight. And therefore, you might get, you know, a day of pleasure in a relationship, or, you know, a relationship might last for a year or two. And then, of course, the hostility and fear are going to overwhelm it. And, oh, well, that's the way relationships go, because everybody knows that's the way relationships go. And it's not true. If you've got the removal tool, and I usually suggest that people, when they think forgiveness, forget about this game, never forgive anybody ever again, never forgive yourself, think removal. Am I in hostility or fear? Then with forgiveness, I can remove that from my perception-making process and change everything.
Yeah, now, one of the things that really impressed me about your work when I first saw the videos, probably over 20 years ago, was that the idea that we have filters and we don't see clearly because we have all these filters through which we see. And so it's impossible for us to really see the world clearly because of what's inside of us due to these previous traumas.
Well, I would word it just slightly differently. Mm-hmm. It's impossible for us to properly generate. Excuse me, just one second. It's impossible for us to properly generate the realities in our minds mm-hmm. that guide us through the world. You know, the world has taught us that each of us has a pair of windows called our eyes, and our eyes show us what's happening out there. And that's totally false. Nobody has ever seen anything outside of themselves with their body's eyes. When we perceive something, and I quote oftentimes from a CIA website, there's a website where they have a text you can download free, that the CIA is researching perception and how to improve the perception of their analysts so they get the best intelligence possible. And one of the things, quote, that they say in their research on their CIA website is that the mind does not record reality, it generates it.
Whoa.
And we haven't been taught that. We've been told we're looking through our body's eyes at what's going mm-hmm. on out there. But we're really generating pictures that guide us through the world. And if our pictures mm-hmm. are off base, if we are using corrupt data, which means anything that comes from hostility or fear, generating mm-hmm. these pictures, we're literally painting pictures on the inside of our eyeballs out of the filters of hostility or fear. And when we do that, what happens is we literally, energetically, fill our structures with that spray of hostility or fear. And not only that, we literally spray that energy energetically on the people that we look at. You know, you go back to the old idea of the evil eye. And that's right. What they were talking about is energetically, the pictures that people have on the inside of their eyes when painted out of hostility or fear are spraying an energy on the people that they look at and spraying an energy into their own cellular structure. And, you know, if I'm spraying acid on somebody, they're probably not going to respond very positively to me. Mm-hmm. If you go back 2,000 years ago in the Aramaic, they asked this man, Yeshua, who's popularly known as Jesus, but his name was not Jesus. It was Yeshua. It was not Jesus or Hail Zeus, which is the name that the Greeks and the Romans, the Greco-Roman world gave to him. You go back to him, and he says, when they ask him, you know, you're teaching us all this stuff, but what's what's first? What comes first in the whole process? And what he says, according to the Greeks, is, well, you've got to love your neighbor, you've got to love God as you love yourself. But in Aramaic, not what it says at all. What it says is that in the long form of that statement would be, in the frontal lobes of your brain, your intentions are stored. There are three filters over your intentions. One's hostility, one's fear, one is love. Most important thing, if you want to maintain a human life, is you keep the filter, and in Aramaic it was called rachma, love, active in the frontal lobes of your brain. That does two things for you. One, it makes sure that the source energy for your, what will ultimately drive your perception, is based in love. And two, it's a gateway that human life enters human form through. You look at the average person that walks and talks today, and they're so filled with hostility and fear that they have conversations about love, but do they ever actually experience the physiological presence of love in their cellular structure? I can't tell you over the years how many people have come to me after I talk about this in a workshop, and they just say, Michael, I don't even know what you're talking about when you talk about love. What is that? Mm-hmm. And again, the best definition I've got is hold a newborn child. And so the first thing in Yeshua's teaching has nothing to do with belief. It's got to do with you're responsible for how your perceptual system guides your behavior. And the first thing is you've got to keep this filter active. And what mm-hmm. that does when you have intentions, because that's what's stored in the frontal lobes of the brain, intentions based in love available, our intentions are the raw material of our goals, and our goals drive our perceptual system. Mm-hmm. There's a second filter over the back of the brain where perception is stored. It was called in Aramaic kupa. And when kupa is active, then everything that we build or construct, as the CIA website says, we construct our perception out of, is now based in love. Therefore, we're going to have the highest and best perception possible for a human system, and we're going to spray on the people we look at the active presence of love. When we do that, we're going to get a whole different response than the response of hostility or fear-based perception. And so that's what comes first in the whole process. And, you know, I tie that in. Back several years ago, I used to keynote at the Global Science Conference out in Colorado. And one year we had a gentleman named Marcel Vogel, who was a 23-year senior scientist from IBM, who showed up at the conference, and he had a camera. It was called a Delaware camera, a camera that takes pictures of energy fields, not pictures of physical things. And with his camera, he was able to take a picture of the high energy waves that leave the mind when we think a thought. Literally, everything that we paint on the inside of our eyeballs sets up and sprays an energy on the people we're looking at. When you go back and you hear this genius piece of advice that says, you got to keep your human life active. You got to keep this gateway and this filter active. It's just monumental. And it's one of the most basic keys to health. I'll oftentimes ask in a workshop, you know, how many have a device in your home or your office or your car or your shop or your kitchen that works really well when you unplug it? And nobody's ever got an answer positive for that. Nothing works if you unplug it from its power supply. Human life is no different. I think we're safe to assume that, you know, the fact that everybody agrees the newborn is based in love, that that's the power supply we're meant to be plugged into. And the world comes along and puts its thumbprints on us, and we lose awareness of that. Forgiveness is how to remove the thumbprints and get back to really, truly functioning out of this awesome active presence of love that we're designed for, and plugging ourselves back into that rather than the hostilities and the fears of our own emotions and the world. And when we do that, the cell naturally starts to recover and reorganize itself towards health.
Mm-hmm. It does.
It does. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And the forgiveness process is how to remove the interfering energies. Again, think forgiveness, think removal. And when I engage in the technology of first century Aramaic forgiveness, I get to remove literally the capacity for hostility, fear, guilt, rage, grief, pain, drama, and trauma. And life just becomes a different game.
And you're removing it not just from the conscious mind. You're removing it at a much deeper level.
Well, if you go back to the Aramaic, they said, take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life. And we couldn't even translate that word heart until just the last few decades when the unconscious was rediscovered. And I say rediscovered because Freud got a Nobel Prize for, quote unquote, discovering the unconscious. But the full understanding of unconscious mind and its function is totally built in, even to the syntax of the Aramaic language from thousands of years ago. And so we're literally talking about a technology that opens the unconscious mind, that opens in the ancient teachings. They talked about the veil of the temple must be rent in twain, torn in two. And they weren't talking about a purple curtain in a church. The temple is this body-mind unit of ours. The veil is the barrier between the subconscious and the unconscious. As long as we live in denial, then we reinforce this artificial barrier that was called the veil, that is the barrier that keeps parts of our minds unconscious, which I think is a totally unnatural condition for human beings. And so to open that veil and to touch into the hidden parts of the mind is the key to the whole forgiveness process, because you can't remove what you can't see, what you can't get back in touch with, you can't remove. And so the forgiveness process is about how to do that, how to get to those hidden parts of the mind. And the way that this artificial barrier is created, and it's just totally and completely habituated into the mind and the language of our society, is that every time somebody's in pain or trauma, their words are, you made me mad, you made me sad, you hurt me. And, you know, I'll ask in a live audience, now how many have ever said that, or how many have pointed at somebody and said, you really have a problem? And, you know, of course, everybody laughs because everybody's done it. And then I'll ask the question, well, if they're the one with the problem, why are you the one with the pain? Something about that doesn't make sense. Maybe you've got a problem and you don't know it because you live in denial. And all you have to do to live in denial is be in the thought process or the words of how somebody outside of you is the cause of something inside of you. And what that does, that state of denial, is it causes us to dissociate from the content of our own minds. That means we create an unconscious. And once we've dissociated from it, it's not ours to fix anymore. We wear it right out there in our sleeves. Literally, we're spraying it everywhere onto everybody, and people respond to it. And the only person in town that doesn't know that it's there is the person who's in denial. And it's not until we crack open that barrier, and that's what forgiveness does, and go back in and remove what never belonged, does that game start to change.
So how does the tool work?
Actually, awesomely well. And I know that's not exactly what you meant, but it works very well. And basically, you know, it's a four-hour workshop that we do, and we can take a few minutes and look at the core of the technology, because it's so backward to what the world thinks that it's hard for people to comprehend without a full explanation of how to use the tool. And actually, they can go to our website and get a full explanation just by clicking a button. It's there free. And we also, 5 days a week, have a radio show where people can call in and ask questions and how to get to correct thinking. And that is that when I look at a world that's based in hostility or fear, what that means is my mind is filled with hostility and fear. And when I recognize that my mind is filled with hostility or fear, what I need to do is find out a way to reverse my understanding that the whole world is the cause of my hostility or fear and recognize that I'm the cause of it. And the core of the technology revolves around what drives perception. There's some interesting Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, that is, there are 10,000 measurable units of electrical activity firing off in the brain, the max amount of information that goes into conscious awareness is 9 bits. So I refer to it kind of with our computer world and our computer literacy as a 9-bit mind. So it's kind of like we have a 9-bit processor. We can process 9 chunks of information in a time frame where 10,000 pieces of information are firing at us. It's about a 25th of a second. And when I realize that I have this 9-bit mind, I see such a tiny fragment of what's going on within me. You know, it's pretty common knowledge that the subconscious and the unconscious are kind of like the iceberg, 5% on the surface, 95% below. And most people's perception, decisions, and behavior are driven from below the barrier. They're driven unconsciously and have no idea. They make all the choices in the world. You know, somebody hears this thing about, oh, we're love, you're love, I'm love, okay, let's function lovingly forevermore, dear. And of course, this person's very sincere and wants to function lovingly. They've made the choice, and they do that until the next time their partner gives them the look. And then they're right back to their old unconscious dynamics because they've done nothing to remove the base of their perceptual hostility or fear. Now, when you recognize that what drives the selection of data out of 10,000 brain cells firing to where 9 bits are what we see and what guides our behavior, you have to ask yourself the question, what determines which 9 bits of information you get to see? And the last analysis, the thing that drives perception is goals. You know, when you think about the world of hostility and fear, again, I'll ask in a live workshop, you know, how many here have ever been really, really upset with somebody who's doing everything you want them to do? Well, of course I'm not upset with them. Really? They're doing, you know, I asked them to do this and they do it. I told them to do that and they did it. I ordered them to do this and they did it. I'm really delighted with them. So notice that when somebody's fulfilling all your goals, you're a happy camper.
Right.
But when one of our infantile demands is not met by someone, that is, a goal we hold for them, they refuse to fulfill, that goal causes our mind to use hostility or fear based in the generational patterns of our bloodline to produce our perception. So now all of a sudden I'm angry at Charlie because Charlie didn't, you know, take care of the thing he committed to taking care of. And I say I'm really angry with him when the truth is when I loaded the goal in my mind for Charlie to do this behavior and he did not fulfill my goal, my goal caused my mind to access the same hostility or fear that my generation showed me was proper behavior when I didn't fulfill their goals. Right. We get into we do a workshop called Codependence to Interdependence, and we look at the what we call a power person dynamic. And the power person is the person in our lives who had more power over our lives at some stage in our lives than we do. Mm-hmm. And that power person, we establish our behavior out of relationship and stress levels with that power person. And someone who doesn't understand that they have unconscious power person dynamics lives their whole lives controlled by those dynamics. Until they can make them conscious and choose them, then once those unconscious dynamics are resonated into activity by goals that we hold, then we're run by that. And, you know, basically there are three behaviors possible for someone who's running on the power person dynamic. And it all relates to the level of stress that they're under. So when someone has no stress, they have an automatic decision system that will cause them to do whatever they did to get along with their power person. Mm-hmm. When stress starts to build, they'll shift out of that and the automatic decision system will kick the heat up a degree or two. And all of a sudden, this person will be doing whatever they did to resist and survive with their power person. And then when they become ultra-stressed, the automatic decision system will kick in and force them to do whatever they did, pardon me, whatever their power person did to them that they hated the most.
Hmm.
And then basically, that's what runs the world, those levels of stress. And what forgiveness does is it lowers the stress level and gives access to the unconscious dynamics hidden underneath the perception. And so when one starts to address the power person dynamics and forgives, then what happens is the perceptions based in hostility or fear collapse when you forgive.
Mm-hmm.
And when they collapse, and you could almost imagine, you know, up there at the top of the brain, conscious perception, that thing collapses and drops in on itself into the inner part of the structure, into the unconscious. And as it does, it opens a pathway into those unconscious dynamics. And once we have that pathway opened, what was formerly the dissociated part of the mind now becomes conscious. Mm-hmm. And when I bring my dissociated mind, my hostility and fear-based mind forward in the presence of active love, what happens is whatever's inaccurate or does not belong in that unconscious mind begins to literally dissolve and disappear in the most amazing way. And I invite people not to believe a word I'm saying. Take the worksheet, use it, and watch what happens. Everything changes when you start to do that. And so the core of the forgiveness process is that if I find myself in hostility or fear towards someone, including the person I look at in the mirror, it's because I or they have not fulfilled the goal I have for them.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the goal. It's not that the goal is the problem. The goal is just the driver that causes the mind to use that unconscious hostility or fear-based data to produce my perception, the thing that guides my behavior. So in the Aramaic language, the word forgive is shebag or shabak, and it literally means to cancel.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm in a situation and I recognize that I'm moving into hostility or fear, if I look at the goal that's driving my perception and I cancel that goal, what will happen is my perception will collapse and I'll drop right into the level of my mind where the hostility or fear originated, and I'll begin to dissolve that hostility or fear. So I'm rolling along in my life, and I want my boss to treat me respectfully. And my boss, I come into the office one morning, and my boss goes into this fit of rage at me and just really berates me. Mm-hmm. And so the forgiveness process in that situation would look like me recognizing that I want my boss's respect. And when my boss goes into that fit of rage and berating me, my response, my perceptual reality, based on my goal to be treated respectfully, opens the content, literally, of my so-called file on how I'm treated. And if my power person dynamic was for my power person to berate me, then I've just replicated that situation once again. And when I cancel my goal to be treated respectfully, which, you know, the average mind says, well, that's ridiculous. I deserve to be treated respectfully. Why would I cancel my goal? That's silly. And you're right. You do deserve to be treated respectfully, Creator. And if you're not being treated respectfully, why aren't you? Why haven't you created that result yet? And it's because there's a part of your mind that believes that you don't deserve it or you can't have it. And what happens when you cancel the goal for this wonderful thing of respect is you collapse the projection of the content of your mind about respect that is projected into your brain's image of your boss. That whole projection collapses, and you get to drop into the part of your mind that holds all this energy around being disrespected. And when you bring love to that part of your mind starts to heal. The part of your mind where that information is stored is a part of your body. The mind functions through every cell in the body. Every cell functions to store information. And if it's hostility or fear-based information, then that cell is diseased, literally, chemically, in an aberrated condition, and is diseased. When I can drop into that cell through forgiveness, I can draw out of that cell that hostility or fear-based disintegrative energy, and the cell is going to begin to heal. You know, there's a cell biologist named Bruce Lipton who's doing some pretty awesome work, and what he's showing is that when we think a thought, we literally produce a molecule, a neuropeptide, and that neuropeptide circulates around in our structure until it finds a cell with a receptor site that matches. The neuropeptide lands on the receptor site, and it replicates, at least that's what the cell biologists are saying. I think it's more of it inserts itself. The neuropeptide lands on the receptor site and inserts itself in the cell, and the insert looks like chemistry in the cell. And so if the neuropeptide is based in thoughts of hostility or fear, then we're literally inserting the chemistry of hostility or fear. It's the mind-body connection. We're inserting the chemistry of hostility or fear into the cell, and the cell begins to deteriorate, and we say, well, this cell's diseased. But what it is rather than diseased, the cell is energetically distorted by the energy that doesn't belong in it. When I remove that energy, the cell can instantly snap back to its original condition and be totally and completely and fully functional and healthy. But while there's an interfering energy there, it's not possible. You know, I'll use an analogy of, let's say we're sitting watching television. We've got a television antenna on the house, and somebody drives up in front of the house with a car that's poorly tuned. All this interfering energy comes in, and all of a sudden my TV is diseased. Look at that terrible picture. Look at all that snow. Look at how the picture's rolling. All that noise and the sound. This TV is broken. I can go in and fix. I can replace every tube, every transistor, every condenser, every part of that television set, and nothing's going to change until I remove the interfering energy. Forgiveness removes the interfering energy in the cell. When I go out and turn the car off in the driveway, the picture clears up. When I remove the interfering energy, when I can access it and remove it from the cell, then the cell can go back to its whole condition. But I can't remove it if I can't access it. And the way to access it is by looking at, in the situation I am in currently, what's the goal I hold for my object of attention? I cancel that goal. I then can step in and start to process that part of my mind. Now, when you realize that these dynamics are based on generations and generations and generations of hostility or fear, then if I've got something that's been going on for, 10 generations, how do I access, how do I process that when my mind can only process 9 chunks of data at a time? That's like, how do I ever get through this? And if you go back 2,000 years ago, the man named Yeshua taught that there was an elemental force in each and every one of us, that when we invited it into activity, we have free will, it will never force itself on us, but when we invite it into activity, it will undo the effects of our errors and teach us the truth. So there's an inner tutor, intuition in us, that when we connect to it and ask it for help, it can literally go right down to depth of the generations, literally changing the content of the genes, literally changing that which ends up becoming my perception, my physiology, my decisions, my behavior, and everything changes.
And what is that called in Aramaic again?
The word that describes the forgiveness process, you mean, or the super processor we're talking about?
The super processor.
Okay, yeah. In Aramaic, it's Rukha, R-O-O-K-H-A, lowercase d apostrophe, capital K-O-O-D-S-H-A, Rukha Dukudsha. They're actually the words that the Greeks translated as the Holy Spirit, but there's nothing about it, this embodied spirit being in there. What it referred to in Aramaic was that inside of each of us, there is this super processor, so to speak. There is this power that when we engage it and invite it into activity, will literally let loose or untie us from those energetic dynamics in the cell. And it will teach us, it will literally show us the truth of how to function at our highest and best in our lives.
I think one of the really interesting things that that I noticed, about the work is that you really have to go back and look at the ancient Aramaic. I have on the wall here in Plastikos, and you have up on your website the translation of the Beatitudes directly from Aramaic into English, and it simply is not anything like what is in the King James Bible. Completely
doesn't
different
even
meaning.
Resemble it.
No.
Very, very little resemblance. For instance, the first word in each of the Beatitudes, through the Greek-based translations, you hear it translated as "Blessed are they."
Mm-hmm.
And this must be a pretty important concept because this is Yeshua's first public teaching, and he uses this word over and over and over again. Gee, it would probably be good if we knew what it meant. Pardon me.
It would, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And so in Aramaic, the word is tuvehun, and tuv speaks about a neural structure or an attitude of mind.
Mm-hmm.
What filter set? And so that word tuvehun, it's a three-part word in Aramaic, and what it says, the long form of what it says is a latent neural structure implanted by the Creator to guide you to happiness and well-being becomes your conscious possession, you who, and then each of the Beatitudes is an instruction set for how to do that, how to bring that neural structure that's already in you up to the surface. We came in with it. We started out with it. Just tap into the newborn. And then the world put its thumbprints on it, and that neural structure was overlaid until it's become virtually totally lost and unconscious for most people. The Beatitudes, and actually personally, I didn't realize what the Beatitudes were until the third time I wrote them out longhand and translated them from the first century Aramaic dictionary that we published in our book, Enlightenment. And the third time around, it clicked in my brain, oh, this isn't a nice philosophy. This is a set of instructions. This is how to bring this latent or unconscious neural structure, which is what tuvehun means, to conscious awareness. So in essence, what tuvehun, as opposed to being blessed of the day, says is a latent neural structure implanted by the Creator to guide you to happiness and well-being becomes your conscious possession. And then each of the Beatitudes is instructions on how to do that. And the Greek scholars are not probably going to rush out anytime soon and say, oh, we were in error. It wasn't done in Greek. It was all Aramaic because, basically they're going to have to go out and get jobs. Because everything that's known from the Greek is just the weakest shadow of what was originally taught. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the first of the Beatitudes is one of the passages that verifies for us that the Aramaic was prime, that it came first. You hear in the name of this man who says, I come to connect you to the spirit of truth, the Greeks saying, we want you to be poor in spirit. And, you know, I've heard preachers go a long way to try to make that one logical.
Yeah, really.
How does that make sense? I'm supposed to be poor in the thing
sense.
That the man came to connect me to.
Yeah, really.
And the word poor in Aramaic is actually home. And a simple fly speck on a piece of paper changes, vowel points change the meaning of a word. So the word home is changed to poor with a fly speck. So now we hear the Greek saying, be poor. But what it was is, the first step in activating this neural structure to guide you to happiness and well-being is that your home has to be in the eternal forces of the universe. That there are energy systems that move all around us. And when we're in touch with those, when we live in those, we are guided. And so our home has to be there. It's not about being poor.
That's a big difference.
When you get to the Aramaic, actually, I'm getting ready on Monday and Tuesday. There's a young man named Dale Allen Hoffman, who's an Aramaic scholar that started working with us back when he was 15 and was introduced to the Aramaic and has become quite a scholar. Now he's in his 30s. And so Monday and Tuesday night, we're actually going to be speaking in Asheville, North Carolina, at a place called the Center for Art and Spirit at St. George. And we're going to be doing two evenings. We're going to videotape two-hour sessions of what I call Aramaicisms. That's a word that I coined to represent correcting the Greek misrepresentations of words and going back to what the Aramaic says. So tuvehun would be one of the Aramaicisms we'll talk about, going from being poor, or pardon me, being blessed, to recognizing that it's about activating a neural structure. And we're going to spend, between Dale and I, we're going to kind of just play with these ideas and bring forward the Aramaic original meanings. And there are just so many words. You know, Vladimir Lenin says, if you want to destroy a culture, change the meaning of its words. Why is the culture of Yeshua, which could be summed up very simply, love those who hate you, do good to those who despitefully use you, why has that culture been lost, and why doesn't it exist on the planet? Or only in very rare instances does someone achieve that. It's because the words have been lost. The how-to has been disappeared. Mm-hmm. And so when I recapture those words and I understand, like for instance, Rachma, there's actually a community of Aramaic-speaking peoples in Southern California. And when we took to them our understanding and our definition of the word Rachma, we asked them, you know, these native speakers, what the word meant. And they said that its meaning had been lost, but that their tradition said it was the most precious jewel you could possibly possess.
Oh, my goodness.
And when you understand that, there is literally a filter in the frontal lobes of your brain that is the gateway into which love, human life, enters. That's a pretty precious jewel. And then it keeps your perception on track so that you get to maintain your human life. That's such an awesomely powerful piece of information. And, you know, the provincial minds that have just thrown that out as this antiquated book that didn't know what they were talking about don't have a clue what's there. And what's there is so monumentally important. But it doesn't serve kings very well, so it's been disappeared pretty much. We're working to reestablish it on a global scale.
Well, just look at what happened when they started doing frontal lobotomies on people.
They weren't
human anymore.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The whole pool of intentions that makes us uniquely human is gone when we're cut off from that, and when hostility or fear is there. So if the filter that's active over the frontal lobes of the brain is hostility, then the only raw material that the mind has got to work with to formulate its goals is that which is destructive.
Right.
If fear is the active filter, then the only raw material the mind has got to work with to produce its goals, which drive its perception, are those things that are negative. And you look at how much negativity and destruction have taken over the planet to the point where human life barely exists anymore.
Yeah.
And so
it's all survival.
That's it. Exactly. And of course, you need to, you're going to need to stay in a defensive posture and survival if what you're doing every time you turn around is spraying everybody in your environment with acid, you know, hostile and fear acids. Of course, people are going to come after you. And so everybody's going after everybody. And, you know, it's just the most amazing thing to watch when the shift takes place. And people start to literally connect to their true nature and spray love on the people around them. Everything changes. Everything changes. It's just a different world.
Now, you said that the first century Aramaic teachings were also found in parts of the Course in Miracles. Is that right?
Yes. Yes, if you look at the core of the forgiveness process in Aramaic, it is precisely identical in the Course in Miracles. We're actually getting ready, when Dale and I do the Aramaicisms Monday and Tuesday, we've also hired the videographer to do a new video for us. There's a lesson in the Course that I consider to be one of the most important lessons in the Course to understand, and it's one of the most misunderstood lessons in the Course. It's called What is the World? And we're going to videotape that one on Wednesday evening. So we'll have, actually out of this week, we'll have three new videos in our repertoire of video teaching. But the precise definition of forgiveness is identical in Aramaic as to what it was or what it is in the Course. And in 45 years of doing this work, I've looked and searched everywhere, and I haven't found anybody else on the planet that understands it. I'll ask people, they'll tell me that, oh, yes, well, I do forgiveness work. And I'll say, well, how do you do that? And the only answer I've ever been able to get is, well, you know, you just forgive. You just forgive. And it's like, well, okay, but tell me, how do you do that? You know, I have a car out here. I don't know anything about cars. You gave me a key. Tell me how I use it. I mean, what do I do? Do I go out and stick it in the headlight? Do I go out and stick the key in the grill? Do I go out and stick it in the tire? What do I do with it? Oh, you walk over and you insert the key in the lock in the door and you turn it. Ah, well, that's cool. Then what do I do with it? Well, you see, on the steering column, there's this place where you, and if people don't have any brain cells for any of that, they don't know where to start. And the world's been teaching us to pardon in place of forgiveness. I let you off the hook. I let you off the hook. I let you off the hook. And they've done, the person who's doing that has done no forgiveness work to date, because that's got nothing to do with forgiveness. That's Greek pardoning.
Right.
And the world, and you look at the whole culture.
Right.
Say again?
You can pardon people all day long, but that changes nothing within you.
Yeah. Well, there's one benefit that can occur from pardoning someone, and that is that if you've got your hostility or fear hooked into your brain's image of them, you can cut that attachment, and so you may not experience that hostility or fear in their presence, but you've done nothing to process out of the hostility or fear, and you're going to find somebody else to put it on.
Right.
Or if this person violates another goal, and that goal drives hostility or fear into perception, then it'll rehook. But you can, there is a beneficial side to pardoning, and that is that I can disconnect my hostility or fear from my brain's image of you, and we'll tend to have a better relationship. But if I really want to get to the forgiveness work, once I pardon, then I take the next step and I go inside myself and I remove my very capacity for hostility or fear. If I pardon someone, if I let somebody off the hook for what's happening inside of me, and I call that forgiveness, then I'm finished. There's nothing else for me to do. I've already forgiven. So I'll never delete my hostility or fear, which means I'm going to play it out again and again and again, which, of course, is the title of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And if people want to review this, this is, you know, a pretty complex piece of information. It took me 30 years to learn it. I started teaching the core of the forgiveness process about 35 years ago. And it's not until the last 5 years that I've really been able to explain it and understand it. And we actually had a gentleman who's a professional trainer, and he's an expert at creating PowerPoint presentations. So he just recently created a PowerPoint that takes 35 years of my work and puts it into a 24-minute PowerPoint. And so if people go to our website, www.whyagain.org, there's a bullseye in the middle of the page. Might have to scroll down a little bit to find it, but there's a bullseye. And to the right of the bullseye, there's a PowerPoint presentation. You can click on it and listen to it free. 24 minutes. We'll go over everything that I just said and very graphically and in a very cool way explain the whole forgiveness process. And then if people want to take it to the next level, then they can go back to the bullseye. They can pull back out of that, go to the bullseye, click on that, and that will open a full set of instructions for how to engage in the forgiveness process. The first link is a free copy of Chapter 24 of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And it's on the forgiveness process. The second link goes to the worksheets. We've developed several different worksheets. And so the second link, we suggest people take the top worksheet on the list. And then the third link under the bullseye will give people some of our most important radio shows, including 14 different shows, which are free MP3s that they can just download and listen to. And there are 14 different situations where we've walked somebody from step one all the way through to step seven of the forgiveness process. And so there are 14 different sets of custom instructions for how to do that worksheet process. And of course, if people start to use that and they have questions, most people listen to my radio show. It's an internet show. They can do it through our website on their computers, but also most people just phone into the show and listen to it on their phone, seeing as how most people have unlimited long distance these days. And so for people to call into the show from 1 till 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, if people call 646-200-4169, they're having a personal conversation with myself and my wife, Jeannie. There's a psychologist from Chicago, Dr. Tim Hayes, who's usually on the show pretty much every day. And we're there to support people being successful, understanding how to apply these tools and really use them in their lives. So every kind of support we can give you. And of course, that's all free. If people want to pay for support, if they want to support us for supporting them, of course, we've got a DVD and a CD catalog. They can go to that and they can order products, order the video of Why Is This Happening to Me Again. We've got 15 different 2-hour DVDs. We'll be adding 3 new ones to that repertoire in the next little while. And they can, of course, invite us. We go anywhere on the planet we're invited. We do our workshops free. We pay our own expenses. And so 95% of our workshops are done free. And so if anybody would like to see us in your hometown and you have a large enough audience that we can fit it into a tour, we'll come and present. And of course, again, the radio show offers free support. And then we have a teaching center in the Ozarks in southern Missouri, a place called Heartland, where we do a summer season each year. This year we're doing 68 days of intensive work. And that 68 days divided into 6 different modules. So there'll be people that will be there, for instance, maybe for a 9-day Why Is This Happening to Me Again, or a 16-day codependence communication practicum, 16-day laws of living. My wife Jeannie does a workshop called Healing the Whole Woman, where she works exclusively with women on and using women's issues with the tools. And she's going to be doing an 8-day Healing the Whole Woman this summer. So we've got lots happening at Heartland. And when we do Heartland, we have an awesome food program. We do total fresh and raw. We don't cook anything. And the food is just the most awesome food you've ever eaten. And the idea behind that is to create vitality, to give people whole, vital foods that support vitality. And people also get an experience of being in the kitchen and getting their hands on that food, learning how to prepare it. And say, for instance, a 9-day intensive for everything, food, accommodations, workshop materials, everything is $1,575, totally inclusive. And so there are lots of ways to get support for using the tools, and we're delighted to have the opportunity to be doing that and to share it with your audience.
Now, I also want to tell the audience that these tools are incredibly important for chronic disease, especially cancer. Cancer
Absolutely.
Is often involved with victim mentality, and forgiveness is extremely important to cure, especially stage 3 and 4 cancers. And I've seen the forgiveness process work wonderfully with chronic disease.
Yeah, and as a reminder, because the average person, when they hear forgiveness, goes, oh, I need to forgive them after what that person did to me. I'm never going to forgive them. It's all right. Never forgive anybody ever again. Please don't do that. Never forgive yourself. You can pardon or not pardon someone should you choose. And you can always, whatever they've done, you can, you know, forgiveness doesn't mean I approve of somebody's behavior or I lay down and take it and let them do it to me. You can always hold people totally accountable for their behavior, and in some mm-hmm. cases maybe legally accountable. But mm-hmm. the forgiveness work is about how if I've got pain stored inside of me around what's going on in my life, then when I drop inside my own dissociated mind and clean out that pain, I now have engaged in forgiveness and removed that which is at the root of all diseases.
Right. Because the cellular structure is affected by the frequency of hostility and fear.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, it literally becomes chemistry in the cell. You know, it's time for the world to catch up with Einstein. You know, we go back and Einstein said this, on such things as matter, we have been all wrong. What we have heretofore called matter is energy, energy whose vibrations have been so lowered as to be perceptible to the senses. There is no matter. There is no material world. Our eye creates solidified pictures as though there was solidified energy out there. What the world of physics is telling us today is that this world that we call matter is actually made of solidified light, energy lowered in its rate of vibration. And vibration in the cell relative to this integrated cellular structure, there are only two qualities of energy. There's that which builds it up, integrative energy, and that which mm-hmm. tears it down, disintegrative energy. And interestingly enough, in the ancient Aramaic language, the word that was used to describe disintegrative energy is the word sin. And sin in Aramaic is an archery term. When you fire at the target and you miss the bullseye, the scorekeeper yells sin. You're off the mark. That's all the word means.
Right.
And when people recognize that, it's like, whoa, you mean hostility and fear? I'm not a terrible, bad, awful, evil, nasty person for that. I'm just mm-hmm. off the mark with my energy, and if I remove that energy, I can get back on target. You know, it's like, mm-hmm. how cool is that?
That
and
is.
Then you bring, you know, it goes back over 100 years ago. Max Planck is a physicist who's receiving the Nobel Prize in Physics, and he says this, as a man who spent his entire life studying matter, I can tell you this much. There is no matter as such. Our entire world, this physicist says, is made of succeedingly smaller patterns of vibratory fields nested one within another within another. And when I'm in pain, when I'm in disease, when I'm in turmoil, I need to start asking myself what I've nested in my cellular structure, not what did somebody do to me. And when I reach into my cellular structure and what's been nested there and learn and develop the skill of removing it, I'm freed of my disease. How cool is that?
That is. Michael, we're at the end of our hour. I wanted to
give
your
website.
That was. I wanted to give your website again. It's www.whyagain.org. And I want to encourage everybody.
Whyagain.org.
Right. And I want to encourage everybody to go to the website. It's a wonderful source of these tools. And this is some of the most important information we've had on this radio show. So please investigate this and take advantage of it. Thank you so much, Michael. I want you to come back on shortly. We'll arrange another session because I know we have more to discuss.
I'm available anytime you want to do it, and it'd be cool to set back, you know, the way we did several years ago and do, you know, a monthly or a biweekly or a weekly. I'm open. I'm available. We just love it.
Okay. Thanks, Michael. This is Dr. Susan Kalb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Please join us next week.